Scott, is Kathy Novak, is she going to be, you know, tied in?
Gentlemen,
is she
just on?
She's in it. She's in attendance, so is Gio. And when the time comes for them to talk, we'll let them speak.
Okay, great. I saw her just drop off the screen, so I just wanted to make sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are live.
That's just because we muted them again, but we can open up the talk and we can promote them to panelists so you can see them if you'd like.
Okay, that would be good.
Okay.
You are now live.
Okay, so we're rolling?
Yes, you're rolling.
Okay, great. All right, good evening. Welcome to the technological regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. This is May 5th, 2020, and we're around 6 p.m. We have a full complement tonight, so we have a quorum. So I'll call the meeting to order. Do we have... does anybody on the commission have announcements they'd like to make?
I've got one, Jerry.
Okay.
I believe the Morro Bay National Estuary is having a webcast on Thursday at 4 o'clock. You can see the link on their website. It's about the health of the bay, and so that should be very interesting for our community.
Okay. Anybody else have anything they'd like to add? I'd just like to say I caught just a glimpse of Christina Johnson's talk on KCBX about the aquarium. And I think they're in some dire straits. So as far as with all the schools being out and stuff. So, if there's anything that anybody can do to help them, that would be appreciated. So we have a before public comment here. I'd like to say that if a member of the public would like to speak on the agenda items or on public comment, if you're on the meeting, please raise your hand on Zoom. Or if you're dialing in, please press 9. The co-host will be able to see how many attendees have their hands raised for public comment and allow them to speak one at a time. When you go to speak, you'll need to unmute your microphone. And so hope this works for people.
Yes, we have two in the queue.
They're for the items that are on the agenda.
Okay. So next item we have coming up is the consent calendar. We have the current advanced planning processing list. The staff recommendation is to receive and file. Does anybody have any comments or questions on this? Okay, seeing none. Okay, there you are, Jesse. You just popped back up on my screen. Do we have a motion?
I'll move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, seeing none. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passed unanimously. Okay, at this point, we're moving on to public hearings. We have one item tonight. That's item number B1, and this is case number UPO-284. The site location is 1001 Front Street, and it's a review of a conditional use permit that was approved by the Planning Commission on May 16th. Do we have any ex parte communications anybody would like to... State? Okay, Michael?
I met with Mr. Garamore and Ms. Novak back in March, I think, at this point, and walked the site and discussed some of their concerns.
Okay. Susan?
And likewise.
Okay. I did the same. I think Joe and I were on the same visit.
Mm-hmm. Did the same thing. And Jesse?
I did the same thing. I'm not sure what day I can pull that up if we need to.
Okay, and I also met with them on site and marked the site with them. So I think we all got firsthand knowledge of this. Okay, so at this point, I'll turn it over to the staff for their presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson Moore, and good evening, members of the commission. This is my first time doing this, so I will attempt to share my screen right now to start the presentation.
Hey, Cindy, I'm sorry. We were supposed to, for some reason, I missed public comment on items not on the agenda. Was there anybody in the queue for that?
Yes, we have two people. Nobody's got their hand raised.
Okay, so those two people are...
It's Kathy and Gio. It's Kathy and Gio for the item.
Okay, that's... Okay, I'm sorry, Cindy. So let's... So we'll open public comment and then close it, and we'll get on to item B1 at this point.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's fine. Here we go. So, yes, this is 1001 Front Street. This is a public hearing request for a CUP minor modification, case file MIN 20-003. It is a minor modification or amendment, they mean the same, to the precise plan conditional use permit UPO-284, which was approved by Planning Commission on May 16th, 2012. The project was also reviewed as a business item by the Planning Commission on February 18th of this year. The applicant is proposing, in response to that meeting, the applicant is proposing minor modifications to public access improvements and establishment of a master sign program. The project location is shown there on your screen at the corners of Embarcadero Front and Beach Street. Project zoning. The property is located in the waterfront zoning district in a planned development and S4 overlay zone. The project is also located in the Coastal Commission's original jurisdiction. As stated, the conditional use permit was reviewed by Planning Commission as a discussion item on February 18th after the PC requested it be brought forward over concerns regarding public access and compliance with the conditions of approval on the 2012 planning permit. The discussion topics at the February meeting included the lateral access pathway, the Beach Street gate, and the public access near the south parking lot by the Fish Market's walk-up order window. Here is the, skip the slide. Just to recap, here is a slide that you all saw at the February meeting. This is for informational purposes, really, but it shows an aerial image of all of the approved uses on site. And on this image, you see in yellow the coastal access pathway, also known as the Harbor Walk. Here's the approved 2012 CUP precise plan. The areas shaded in gray are the required public access. And here is the applicant's proposed CUP minor mod plan. This also shows the public access area shaded in gray. On the left side of the screen is the north side of the lot, which is where the Beach Street gate is located, and on the right side of the screen is where the Fish Market walk-up window is. The modifications discussed in the staff report cover five distinct discussion points: the lateral access at the Fish Market, placement of coastal access signage, the parking lot, the Beach Street gate, as well as the master sign program approval. And I'll discuss this in the next, discuss these issue points in the next slides. First, to address concerns regarding access being blocked at the south end near the near the walk-up window, the applicant is proposing to create more room by shifting parking stalls to the east in order to separate the food service line from the coastal access walkway. This includes placing bollards for clear delineation and extending the customer line south. no parking spaces are proposed to be lost with this plan. And here in this image, you see the plan. It circled in red is the area I just described with the relocated order line to the east and the shaded Harbor Walk access way to the right, or sorry, to the west. Here's a recent photo of what this looks like currently. And I'm going to try to use my little laser pointer here. So bear with me for a second here while I pause. Okay. So in this area, you see the end of the bollard area as it currently is, and it extends for about the first parking stall with a small sign delineating order line versus coastal access. And then this area is the proposed location of a new 18-inch by 24-inch coastal access sign. Secondly, coastal access signs. So to ensure visibility of signs, the applicant is proposing 7 areas where sign locations are proposed to be adjusted and also add 2 new coastal access signs. The first 2 on this list are signs that I just showed you in the previous slide. Number 1, the order line sign language would be modified to emphasize coastal access. A new sign would be placed at the railing along the bayside just south of the Fish Market building. And number 3, the coastal access sign that's on the southwest corner of the Fish Market building would be relocated to the patio windscreen. And 4th, a coastal access sign that is currently on the north, on the wharf, the public view deck, and it's the slide says north, but it's actually on the south side of that public view deck, would be relocated to the pump shed on the north side for better visibility. Here is with a copy of what those signs 1 and 2 would look like, the Fish Market walk-up sign on the right and the new railing sign on the left. And this is our standard coastal access sign, our standard coastal access sign that we see in other parts of the waterfront that brands this as the Morro Bay Harbor Walk. In this picture, really the pictures are basically both sides of the same image. On the image on the left, this is image number 3, where this coastal access sign would be relocated to the corner of this window frame. And then this picture here would be relocated there. In this image, shows the public view deck. The existing waterfront sign that is identifying the public view deck would be moved from the south side of the wharf over here to the pump shed, a higher location for better visibility. And then the last 3 sign locations would be in the area of the Beach Street Gate, number 5. The applicant is proposing to relocate the existing coastal access sign to the opposite fence for better visibility. Proposes placing a new 18 by 24 inch coastal access sign on the gate, visible when the gate is open. And then number 7, retaining the existing sign that identifies temporary Harbor Walk closure during periods of commercial unloading. Here are some pictures of what that looks like. On the left, you see this is the existing coastal access sign that would replace this sign here. And then the applicant's plans show placing a new 18 by 24 inch Morro Bay Harbor Walk sign in that area. Third issue point, parking. The applicant proposes to revise the site plan to restripe the 4 existing parking spaces in the north lot to a 30-degree layout. This would minimize vehicle encroachment into the walkway. As a result of this, no parking spaces are proposed to be removed. The applicant is proposing an addition of asphalt to the transition area between the parking lot and the wharf, as you can see in this picture here on the screen. That would allow to improve for accessibility. And the car that you see just off the edge of this picture would be shifted to the east to allow that accessibility. Here's the existing parking lot with that public access walkway shown in the yellow striping. issue point number four. The applicant is requesting to retain the gate at the Beach Street entrance for security and liability reasons of the commercial fishing business. As noted in the staff report, the applicant is requesting a six-month review of the by the Planning Commission with a log of gate closures demonstrating compliance. The 2012 CUP did not include a condition on the gate. Specifically, it was the 2018 CUP amendment for the Burgess kiosk, which included a condition to open the gate by 7:30 every morning. If the Planning Commission accepts the applicant's proposal, Planning Condition 2 would require a record of gate closures to use in the six-month review follow-up. Point number five, signage. The CUP minor modification request includes establishment of a master sign program to encompass all business signage on site. The plans submitted include pictures of all existing signs. No new business signs are proposed. The total signage, including menu boards, is 236 square feet, where 123 square feet is allowed. And just as a point of clarification, the staff report said 120. It's supposed to be 123, as shown on this slide. The city sign ordinance does allow for sign ordinances to be exceeded, sign allowances to be exceeded with approval by Planning Commission. Although it does exceed the base sign allowance, this master sign program approval would memorialize signs on site, which do not appear to be excessive for the property due to the number of businesses for which it serves, as noted on the slide, and the multiple street frontages and pedestrian access. On this image here, you see the existing business signs on site. Planning condition number one would be, is recommended to require sign restoration of the two Godfather signs. And these are older signs. You see them on the top of the slide there. In conclusion, the proposed amendments are minor in nature and intended to more fully comply with the project's original conditions and also intended to address the comments given by Planning Commission during the February meeting. The proposed modification is consistent with the CUP and coastal development permit. Staff therefore recommends conditional approval of the project by adopting PC Resolution 10-20 for the CUP minor modification MIN 20-003 to the CUP precise plan UPO-284. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay, thanks, Cindy.
Welcome.
Do we have any questions for staff? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody raise their hands, so I guess we'll go to this point. We'll have the applicant, if they would like to make a presentation.
I'm moving Kathy to panelist, and I'm going to do the same with Gio. And I'm bringing Jesse back.
Okay. Did we really need him?
We lost him. All right. We should be getting folks on now. Both Kathy and Gio, you guys are up. So if, I don't know which one of you guys is going to talk or whatever, but you need to unmute if you're going to whoever's going to go first.
Okay, I'm not seeing anybody come.
There we go. Okay, I think I got it now. I had to get the screen to come up. All right.
Okay.
Good evening.
Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the club.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. Yeah, all this technology stuff right now, it's like, oh, it's crazy. But I appreciate the Planning Commission going the extra efforts to do this kind of stuff. Just for the record, my name is Kathy Novak, and I'm here representing Giovanni DeGuillermo for this project tonight. Before I begin, I'd like to thank staff for meeting us with after the last commission meeting so that we could discuss the options and also formulate a plan with modifications that were supported by them. I would also like to thank the commissioners for meeting us on site so we could show you and discuss the proposed plans. We really felt this was a much better way so we could give you a comprehensive understanding of the site and the constraints, as well as an ability to point out the proposed modifications. staff has provided an in-depth written and oral presentation tonight, and this coupled with our previous site visits really addresses all the points we had previously discussed at the last Planning Commission meeting. So therefore, I really don't have any additional comments tonight. I think it'd be better served for me just to answer any questions you might have. Gio wasn't planning on talking, but he is here in case you have any questions for him. So in conclusion, I'd just like to say that Giovanni would certainly like to put all these issues in the rear view mirror and also move forward so he can continue with his business while at the same time make sure that he can offer public access in a safe manner. So again, we'd like to thank everybody for meeting with us and the staff support on this. And we hope you are able to support this presented tonight.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. Let me check and see if we have anybody else that would like to speak on public comment to this item. Scott, do we have anybody in the queue?
No, there's nobody in there.
Okay, Dave. We'll bring it back. Kathy, you may want to come back on. Do we have any questions for Kathy? Michael?
Kathy, I just wonder if you could state for the record, you know, what's the position about the gate being retained? Can you talk a little bit more in depth about why the operation feels you need the north gate on the project?
It's very important for security purposes. I think that in your staff report, we really did go through and address those points. You know, at nighttime, we've got the fuel dock down there. Giovanni's had some problems in the past. That if the gate is left open at nighttime, people will have illegally placed oil products and et cetera right there by the fuel dock station. And then Giovanni's responsible for disposing of these things. We have issues with people coming in and ransacking and trying to start his equipment. He's got videos of a certain person trying to start one of the forklifts down there. There's no railings on the wharf down there. So at nighttime when it's dark, because it's not well lit, and people could have issues with falling off the wharf, which would be the last thing we would want anybody to do. So it's a lot of security issues. And I think really Giovanni's trying to do his best here at opening the gate at 7:30 in the morning. We said once before that commission meeting that he got the time wrong and he apologizes for that. But he's committed to opening at 7:30, closing it at dusk, and just for public safety and then his protection for the fuel dock, the fuel supply down there, so somebody doesn't get in there and start monkeying around with any of the equipment on the fuel dock and causing any environmental issues.
A little follow-up to that. One of the citizens that communicated with the Planning Commission, I'm not sure how people see those. I think the message from Mr. Green's on the city website, that we got some other correspondence from Ms. Winholtz as well. But one of the things that was brought up was the idea of if the gate was retained, taking down the wooden pickets that are in it and making it more transparent through the chain link. Is that something that you've thought about before?
I don't know if we really thought about it. I when I saw that comment this afternoon come through, I did go on to Google Earth and I looked, and when the gate is open during the daytime, when it swings out with the wood pickets in the fence, it's really not blocking anything because it swings out toward the bay. So if anything, it's hiding some of the double check valve and the fuel dock building down there. And the other side gate really is just, it's really not much of an issue. It's just, you can't see there's like a carport shed where Giovanni's puts his equipment and that kind of stuff and is protecting that. But it's really nice to have have that wood on there, especially when the gate is open, because when he puts the coastal access sign on the gate to indicate that there's coastal access going through there, having something behind that coastal access sign is going to make the sign more prominent and a little easier to read. If you don't have those wood pickets in there, then that sign's kind of blend in with the background and people are not going to see it as well.
Okay, let me jump in on this, Michael, too. This was one of my issues, too. Kathy, have you thought about swinging it from the other post so that it comes back up against stack instead of swinging out? And it does block some of the bay view that way. So basically reversing the swing on it.
Well, I think that's a problem. So there's a double gate down there. So the one gate that's open right now that swings toward the bay, and then there's another gate adjacent to it, and then there's a small section of fence. So the problem is going to be if you try to swing the gate the other direction, that you've got some equipment and things right behind that second gate, which would be the east gate, if we want to call it that. So swinging, you're taking away the ability to have a double gate if you only have it swing one way. Does that come to sense?
Yeah. But what about maybe turning that, you know, turning that gate into a rolling gate? The other option, because as you're coming down Bay Street, you do block, you know, you do block some of the bay view. That's the end of the bay of Beach Street there. So,
well, I actually went through Google Earth this afternoon to look at that very issue, and it really doesn't do much of a view block because you've got the fuel dock building behind the gate, and there's a double check valve, and there's some things. So there's really only a little tiny portion of it that you could say would be blocking the view. And then putting a slider, there's not enough room because, again, it's a double gate. So you can't really slide it across the Stacks building, because when you pull it towards Stacks, then you'd be rolling a gate in front of the windows that are at Stacks, because there's just not enough room for the double gate, the width of that gate, to make it into a rolling gate.
Okay. Well, does anybody else wish to speak to this item specifically? Okay, Joseph.
I'm just going to give my opinion on the issue of the gate, if that's what you're asking for. I can appreciate that this is an attractive nuisance which creates problems for the applicant, I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt and maintain the gate and see.
Joseph, let me interject here a little bit and just say this is still for questions.
All right.
We'll go to comments. I'm sure we're going to have a discussion on this.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's fine. Michael, I interrupted you. Is there anything else you'd like to ask Kathy?
No, that's the main questions I had at this time.
Okay, then Joseph, do you have any questions for Kathy?
No.
Susan?
No.
Okay, and Jesse's dropped out of my queue, so is he still on?
He's there.
Okay, I don't see him. So Jesse, did you have anything to say, ask Kathy about?
I did, actually. Let me phrase this in the form of a question, like Alex Trebek.
Yes.
Would Mr. DeGaramore be opposed to a chain with signage hanging from it that is more of a psychological barrier than a physical one?
That's not going to do any protection for security at nighttime, because the idea here is trying to prevent the public from accessing behind that building and having access to the fuel dock property and the wharf and all the equipment at nighttime. During the daytime, the gates open so that people can go through there so that we can maintain that public access. And then the chain idea would only be up, or the gate would be closed, when the commercial fishing activities are going on, like it's a part of the permit. But a chain won't help at nighttime.
Okay. Okay. Do we have any questions for the applicant on the pathway? Does anybody have any questions for her on that? The lateral access through the property. Okay. I have a question on that for you, Kathy. Through the property, there was a on the original plan that was laid out and was approved by Coastal Commission, the tanks were set, you know, on the wharf or further away so that there was more of a straight line access through the property. The way you're proposing, you have a jog that goes around the two tanks. Why were those tanks put there instead of putting them where you had originally planned for what you put into application for the Coastal Commission?
So where the tanks are right now, where the, if you're looking at your site plan and you look and you see the shaded gray area that's indicating where the public view deck is, there's a 12-inch elevation change between the wharf, which would be to the left, which is in the white, and then to the right, the gray for the public view deck area. Giovanni had had problems, even though he had like a stripe on there indicating that there was a hazard coming up. People were tripping off of that area, and then he actually had forklifts drive over that section. So he turned the tanks around so that he could block that portion of the wharf so people wouldn't trip or fall off that 12-inch elevation change. So what he's trying to do here is trying to accommodate and leaving the tanks. The tanks are hard plumbed in right now for because they need to have recirculating water. But what he's trying to do here, because he realizes that there is this transition, and the only way that you could completely level off the transition would be to tear out the whole entire wharf and then redo the elevation. So what he's thinking here is that if he can come in that transition area and then add some asphalt so that he can slope that transition area down around the tanks, then that gives a little bit better transition for people coming down the coastal access way than sloping down onto the rest of the asphalt and onto the public view deck. It really is not going to help to pull those tanks or that at least that one tank back and make it on the wharf, because again, we have that elevation change there. And the way that when you were on site and we were looking at it, we all felt, I think, that was the best thing to do is add the asphalt in there and just leave the tank for protection for that drop off.
Okay. That section, as we talked about on that section of the parking lot, it is on fill. So you could have some of that elevation ground away and reset, and then a little bit longer ramp and a straight shot run through there. And still have protection for the drop off there rather than jog around it. I know it's you know, would require more work, but it's not infeasible to do. It just seems like we're working around something that wasn't on the plan, that was put there ad hoc and wasn't approved to begin with, and then now we're jogging around that. So that'll be something that we'll need to discuss a little bit more. So,
if I can add on to that, so for clarification points, so the elevation change is already there, and even if the tanks were removed, you'd still have that elevation change there. So it doesn't really change from where it was in the original permit with the tanks running the other direction. So what we're trying to do is try to make this safer. If we start trying to add ramps in, then we're slowly going down this path of how far do we go? Because once we start doing some things, we start triggering some other ADA requirements, and then pretty soon we're looking at, well, then this is not ADA accessible, that's not ADA accessible, and then we run down this path that we could be doing a lot of major changes. If we had to put a ramp in, the problem that I see with the ramp is, if you did an ADA ramp with a 12-inch elevation change, you're talking about a 12-foot ramp, and then we have to have a 5-foot by 5-foot clear at the top and the bottom, so then we're talking 22 feet. So if you go from the end of the harbor walk where it starts to jog, and let's say the tank wasn't there and you started the ramp at that point in time, then you've got almost 22 feet, you're coming into the public view deck area, and you're going to have railings on that ramp, because you'll have to meet those standards. So pretty soon, then you've taken up almost half of the view deck area with a ramp going into with rails, where people are going to have to start walking around the ramp to either get to the harbor walk or from the other direction. If there's like people from Verges that are coming down for their sport fishing, they're going to have to be walking around the ramp through the public to get to the gangway. So the ramp is kind of problematic of putting it in the middle of the view deck area there. So this is why we thought this is the best way to go, is a solution to this problem that we're looking at, so that we don't have people falling off the elevation or trying to provide at least a little bit of a smooth transition for them.
Okay. Does anybody else have any questions about the pathway. Okay. Joseph?
One question from our last meeting about this. I recall that the property is a combination of leasehold and private property. So the area of the storage shed and the equipment, is that private property or leasehold property? Do you know, Kathy?
Part of it is on leasehold and part of it is on the private property.
Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to know.
Okay. The next item I think we need to have questions on is the south access. And does anybody have any questions for the applicant as per the south access? This is the parking lot, the public parking lot, private access transition where the order window is. Okay, let me go with Jesse first.
Well, I mean, I know I'm trying to not phrase this in a disrespectful way, so let me try and, with all due respect, we've all been kind of seeing pictures of folks during this crisis time that shouldn't be there, number one. Number two, aren't socially distancing, aren't wearing masks, things like that. That's not the point of this. But if you've seen the pictures recently on social media of what's occurring in that parking lot, I think we're creating another different problem because they were actually angling out of the wait window, actually towards the driveway and behind vehicles. And it was just, it was a different problem. Do you foresee that being a problem?
No, I think so. So what we're going to do in this walk-up window is we're going to go in front of the vehicle, so between the vehicles and the harbor walk, so that people are visible. My concern is if we try to angle the takeout line to go back toward the t-shirt shop, for example, then you're going to have people queuing in the parking lot. There's going to be vehicles backing up, and there's kids running around, and a car is backing up out of one of the parking spaces, and they can see the kids. It's going to be a disaster. So what we're trying to do is move these bollards over to get them off of the actual harbor walk and onto the asphalt area and delineate a line there that goes in front of the vehicles. Now, we found out that afterwards that the parking lot spaces are actually deeper than we thought. So all we have to do is move the wheel stops back. And we don't have to restripe because the stripes are already long enough, and we'll just put wheel stops so people can't encroach into the take-up window line, and then there would be the existing harbor walk or sidewalk area for people to walk past to have access to the harbor walk.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but that wasn't you misunderstood my question, or I misstated it. But what I meant to say was, based on the pictures I've seen, there's been some attempts at trying to queue the line currently. But the pictures the images I've seen on social media recently in the last couple days, weeks, or very recently, are of basically a giant number of folks just kind of mulling around in the parking lot towards the driveway, in the actual drive, the vehicular approach in the driveway. I don't know where I'm going with this question other than to say I think we're fixing one problem, but creating a bigger one.
So I have photos that Giovanni sent me, and then also Sean Green, I know, had sent you one. And Giovanni put red tape on the pavement down here so that he could create this queuing line and then have the safe distancing. I don't really can't answer the questions on people standing in the parking lot and doing things. If the public is going to, you know, I just don't know how to answer to control the public. We're figuring this is the safest way to control the public out of the parking lot is to put this queuing line in front of the vehicles.
Okay. Michael, you had a question.
Yeah. I noticed in the plan, there's definitive striping called out from the north gate all the way down to where you get into the public view deck area. But there's nothing in this southern access point to indicate with striping or things like that. Is that something that you took a look at and dismissed, or is there, could that be something to consider?
Actually, what we're going to do, so we're on the site plans where you says relocated order line, we're going to put a couple of those bollards that you see down there now. We're going to put a couple of bollards on down this and make a line and put the chain in between the bollards so that we actually create a queuing line. If we need striping on the pavement as well, I mean, that certainly we can entertain that. But we thought with the bollards and chains going in between the bollards, then there's an obvious line that the people need to get into. And that's what we were hoping to do. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Any other questions on the south access for the applicant? Okay. Then, so we've talked about the gate, we've talked about the pathway, we've talked about the south access. Do we have any questions for the applicant on the signage program? Okay, I'm not really seeing any questions on that. So, did you have anything else you wanted to say at this point, Kathy?
I can't really think of anything. I think Giovanni's trying to be helpful and trying to work with you guys the best that he can for, you know, and keeping the public safe as well. So we certainly appreciate all your efforts and understanding of and coming down and, you know, talking to us on the site so that we could really point out what was going on. I think that was really helpful. So thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll close the public comment and bring it back to the commission again. And if we need to, we'll open it back up again. So we can get the applicant's response. Okay, who wants to go first on this one? Jesse?
Reluctantly, it seems like nobody wanted to go first.
I was deferring, so.
I'll start this off. So I have some strong feelings about the fence. I really don't think the gate on the north end belongs there. I believe that there's still access to this area via the south entrance. And I think the negative outweighs the positive on it. That's my personal opinion, that I think the gate should go. We should have some sort of a chain and some cones or something non-permanent, maybe a psychological barrier to keep people from wandering in there, if that's necessary during operations. But I think the coastal access issue is too significant to leave it there. That's just my opinion. The south entrance where the queuing line is for the ordering window, and Mr. DeGuermore has been very successful, and not of any fault of his, but I mean, it's just creating a problem that's just become unmanageable, I think. And anybody that kind of goes down there on the weekends or, this isn't supposed to be a busy time, but this is a non-busy time. And we have folks just kind of not doing what's necessary to keep the public safe. There was, you know, toddlers running around in the parking lot. I saw it with my eyes. So I think we have to realize that this is a problem. I think the only real solution is to cue the line towards the t-shirt shop. I know that's not ideal. I know that's not what the applicant is wanting. But I think we have to just, you know, be big brother here and say, you know, we have to do what's best for the public. So that's my opinion on everything else. That 12-inch drop-off, I'm kind of in agreement on that. I think, you know, it's opening up Pandora's box as far as accessibility. Nothing's accessible down there anyway. But, I mean, asking them to fix it, to move a tank just to fix it, just I'd rather give in other areas if we're compromising. I'd rather that be an area we didn't ask for something and we got something else on a flip side. I think the public benefit is greater in other areas than the tanks. I would love to see it all fixed, but if we had to give on anything, I'd rather give there and get definitely. I think priority one for me would be the queue line, making that towards the t-shirt shop and having some very clear delineation, some very clear vehicular travel areas where vehicles are supposed to be, where people are supposed to be, and making sure the two don't intersect. So I think that's got to be, public safety's got to be number one there. Coastal access has to be my priority on the other end. Removing that gate would be my preference. And then, you know, if we had still some equity, some trust equity left in this thing, maybe we can get that repaired by the tanks. But that's how I would approach it.
Okay, thank you, Jesse. Susan?
So I have a hard time understanding. Okay, I understand the concerns for public safety. What I have a hard time understanding is how you don't have those same concerns for the north end. In my mind, it's critical that that gate be closed at night for all the safety reasons they talked about. People wandering in at night, falling off the docks there, people getting into the equipment, the fuel tank stuff. So in my mind, I absolutely feel for public safety, it's really important that that gate be closed at night. In terms of removing wood slats from it, I think chain link fences are by nature very ugly. So in some ways, the wood at least makes it look better. A little more natural look to it. I think I would like to see, I would like to give Giovanni's queuing idea a chance. So what they have set up now is not what they're planning to set up. Nothing has changed yet. I'm assuming that's correct. So if they really do delineate these lines, you will have the bollards and the chains or whatever with the lines of people waiting for their food adjacent to the area where people are accessing the coastal access route. And I, you know, he's cursed by being so popular, and that's a problem a lot of businesses would like to have. So I'd hate to see us limit that. And I think these are strange times we're in right now, you know, in terms of children running around in parking lots and not having as many vehicles. So many people are walking down instead of driving. So I think if and when we start to open and get back to some kind of normal life, we may see some changes in all of that anyhow. I think also that in my mind, this is one of the last areas where the needs of our commercial fishing community are being addressed. And it's really important that we don't damage that. So that's another reason I'd like to see that access as a privilege for that one small area of the waterfront, and for the times when the fishing community needs it for the work that they do. The only other comment I think, oh, the drop thing, I think, and I've dealt with things like this even near my business with infrastructure problems. Businesses sometimes have to come up with creative ways to make an area safer for people. So when you have a drop like that, or we have sidewalks that are uplifted, you sort of put something in that area. And I like what they did actually with using the asphalt to at least smooth that access around there. The only other thing I had, and it's very minor, is those signs, the Codfather signs, the restoration of them. I love the old weathered look of them. And, you know, maybe if you just put some polyurethane over them or something. I have the original Taco Temple sign in the garden at my shop. And we did have that repainted and restored. And it's just not the same. You know, I wish we had just hit it with some polyurethane or something ahead of time, so you kept that vintage look to it. That's minor. You do what you want to do with it. But so those would be my comments.
Okay. Thank you, Susan. Michael, I'm sorry. Yeah, Michael, go ahead, and Joseph, you'll be next.
Just to follow up with Susan, I've been repurposing about 400 lineal feet of 1960s redwood that I salvaged from a few years ago. And so, you know, it's really interesting to see what old pieces, what old screw holes and things like that am I going to retain on some of these things while I've taken off some of the aging, you know. This is a fantastic, you know, parcel. I love that we have a working harbor, and I as I mentioned last meeting, I was happy to retreat the walkway off of the wood path so that those operations have more dedicated space there. I think people are pretty flexible once they're in that zone. I think walking around the tanks is okay with me. The key things for me are the coastal access points and how you know when you're on the path. And the idea of access to me is really special. And as I mentioned last time, it's counterintuitive to me that for a safety thing, having wood in a fence that keeps you from seeing what's behind the fence if somebody is there, or that the fence ends up being a dead end if somebody gets chased in there. I still think that's a potential issue of liability. It's different. I'm willing to look at the opening of the gate with the agreed upon times to see how that works with monitoring on that. So I'll accept the gate with the monitoring that we'll come back and look at that at a future date. I like the striping. What I'm concerned about though is I use this facility probably more than I should for my waistline, but the south entrance, I think there's something about, you know, I've noticed in the bike paths, when we have the green paint on the bike paths, people know it's the bike path. That's where you're supposed to be. When you've got the striping in the parking lots, people know that that's not where your car belongs. And so there's something about, I don't have a strong opinion about this, but my sense is if we start striping where the access points are, you stripe the south access way and you don't put the bollards in the south access way. And you don't have people queuing up in the south access point. And I think some kind of differentiation besides just the bollards would be something I would encourage us to talk about. I'm fine with the signs. I think eventually, I hope we get better signs. I'm not a graphics expert, but I'm not crazy about our coastal access signs. I think we're kind of stuck with them. But I don't have any problem with the additional square footage of signage on the project. And I do think it's important that we're concerned about the public access. You know, I think if Gio has an incredible weekend and he's got a queue out there, it's up to him how to figure out how to get that queue in there. It can't interrupt the public access. So I'm fine to be agnostic on the order line, as long as the harbor access is very clear and we have it demarcated in the south and monitored in the north.
Okay, thanks. Joseph?
I'm persuaded that the area where the sheds are is a place where all sorts of mischief could happen, and there's a need for the gate, notwithstanding that there isn't any gated area so that you can still approach the area from the south. So I also think that the wooden aspect of the gate is probably more attractive than a cyclone fence, and so I don't mind the wooden gate at all. But I'm thinking that the gate should remain, and at such time as the leasehold is renegotiated, there might be a discussion then about some, you know, serious redesign in terms of providing more sort of security at night for the shed area or the tank area, other ways of preventing the mischief. But I realize that would require certain additional expenses, and I'm not prepared to have the applicant do that at this time. With respect to the south and the queuing, I think we should see if the new attempt at queuing works. And I think there's a good chance that it would. And I agree completely with Commissioner Lucas that it's really up to the applicant to do what he thinks is necessary to also to self-regulate this, and to take an active role in making sure that this movement, this relocation of the queuing area, really, really works. And the only other thought, with respect to the signage, I get that we need more signs because there are a whole variety of businesses there. But I was looking at the southern facade of the fish market, and pretty much that whole facade is covered with signs. I don't have a strong opinion on this because I've gotten used to, looking at the establishment, and I have sort of a fond affection for it. But I'm wondering if we could take down one or two of the signs, because I wrote down page 42 of the filing is, a picture of the southern facade of the fish market, and there are lots of signs there. I think that's really all I have to say about it.
Okay. My comments on it are that, I walked the site with them. Am I being broadcast? Okay. All right. So I walked the site with them and we discussed several of these items, and I basically came to the, it's a philosophical difference between should private enterprise and private business be utilizing the public space, especially the lateral access for the public assets for their private enjoyment and their benefit, and not the public's benefit. And so that south access is the two points that I have the biggest problem with are this south access and the gate. The south access, I don't believe that the bollards are going to do the trick. I think people are just going to step over them, step around them, stand in the way and lean up against the railing and wait for their orders to come out. There, it's, I saw that today, even though there were three or four different people there, two of them were standing over in the middle of the public access waiting for their orders. So I don't think it's going to work. Saying that, due to the extraordinary situation we're in, I'm willing to let them give that a chance and see if they can make it work. But I think it needs to be reviewed at the 6 month and the one year anniversary on this also to see that it continues to work. But I don't, with this in the North Gate, I don't think it's the city's responsibility to make sure that a private business that stated that they were not going to do this, that we have to monitor them to be in compliance with what they propose to do. And so I think it's up to the applicant and up to them to make sure that this is going to work out and not be put back onto the city to be the gate, quote unquote, the gatekeeper on this. They need to make sure that they're in compliance with what their CUP and what their plan stated that they were going to do. And they should not block the public access, the lateral access to the bay. That is one of our most important assets that we have for the community. The entire community utilizes this, and it's the attraction. It's one of the attractions why that business is so good. Not the only reason, but one of them. And so he needs to protect that. And they need to make sure that stays, stays free and clear. And that's up to him and not up to the city. So I'm willing to go along with a 3 month and then probably maybe a 6 month and maybe a year review on this to see that it is continual and that it does work out. As far as the gate goes on the north end, the coast, you know, I've written on one of the plans and in the condition on the Coastal Commission originally, they required the removal of that gate. We do not have any gates. We required the removal of gates throughout the lateral access or a couple other projects that we required the removal of the gates on, where they had gated and they had blocked it off. I'm willing, once again, to let them go with the 3 months to see how it works out. But everybody that is running, that has a commercial enterprise in this whole town has problems with vandals, has problems with people coming onto their property. I am nowhere near, you know, my commercial property is nowhere near as attractive as an attractive nuisance as this. And I still have people, you know, several times a month, I'll have people having gone onto the property at night, you know, to see what they could do, you know, theft, all of that. This happens, and it's one of the issues of having a commercial property. And it's one of the issues you need to take care of. And so, I think there is ways that he can fence off his private and the important areas rather than fencing off the lateral access for the community. But once again, I will go, and because of this, the situations we're in, you know, I will allow them to do a three month trial and then review it probably 6 months and then 1 year again to see if it is working. I don't think it will, but I'll get behind that at this point. As far as the signage, so let's talk about the pathway. I'm torn on this because I don't know how we can approve a project that isn't ADA compliant and how we can allow something that's not ADA compliant. But once again, and then, you know, the tanks were set there so that the pathway has to go around the tanks. I think it could have been better thought out on the front end, where this conundrum wouldn't have happened. I think that the 12-inch drop can be handled by a curb along the wharf area to keep traffic and keep forklifts from going over it. And then there's also on all of the wharfage in the waterfront area does not have fencing between the edge of the wharf and the bay. We would have to do that on every dock and every street in if that was a requirement we were going in. So I don't believe that's good. You know, I don't believe that's a valid argument. Once again, I will allow them to come through with their solution to see if it works. If it doesn't work, then at the 3 month, 6 month, and 1 year review, we can then take a look at it and require it to be done what I would assume would be the correct way. As far as the signage, I think Susan had a good idea on that. I kind of like the funky Godfather signs and stuff. They're just, they give it a little bit of that unique character. I'll let them handle that the way they want. It's tough to create a patina. So, you know, I give them, only time does that. I think there's a lot of extra signs there, but I'm not gonna pick nits on this one. Okay, Jesse, you raised your hand on this.
Yeah, if I can, it sounds like I'm in the minority on this, and maybe that's
I actually agree with you, Jesse, but I think...
I was going to say, if we're going to do the three-month trial and we really need to identify and establish some kind of benchmarks, that way we can evaluate how it's going and what we're expecting to happen if certain benchmarks aren't achieved and if certain benchmarks are achieved, you know. So we really need to have some sort of enforcement ability for Scott to go in there and say, you have to do this, you didn't do this, or you need to do this.
So. Well, I think it needs to come back before us. You know, that I don't want to put it back on Scott. I think it needs to be reviewed by the Planning Commission.
So, what would you think appropriate benchmarks would be? I mean, how would we evaluate their performance? I mean, I don't know if that's the right word, but
that's a very good question. You know, the South Gate needs to be logged when it's open, when it's closed. You know, I mean, the North Gate, the South End. You know, there needs to be people going down there, and it needs to the traffic needs to be controlled by, you know, by the applicant and not by the city. I think that the window needs to be moved so it's on their property and the queue is on their property, and that's where it should have been in the first place. You know, they created this nuisance by the design of their restaurant. It's not the city's problem. You know, it is their problem. They're using a public resource for their private gain by pushing the queue out into the public parking lot instead of having it on their property, which we would require anybody else to do. You know,
I know this is not going to be a popular thing for the applicant, but just food for thought, you know, in evaluating these concerns we have, it occurred to me that the only real way to do this would be to have some sort of camera focused on the harbor, on the south entrance and on the gate area. We could see what time it opens. We could see what time it closes. We could see how often we're getting impeded traffic through that area. I mean, if there's another way, I don't know of it.
I think that's a great idea, and in my discussion with them as we walked the property, they said they were already doing that, or would be doing it. Another camera on the queue for the parking lot, I think would be valid. So, who else would like to chime in on that?
Is anybody have? I mean, my concern about things like cameras are, how do you measure? You know, again, the graphic on the ground, I think, gives you a very precise thing that says, hey, the bollard's in the walkway. You know, and I think if you don't demarcate it, it gets abused. You know, and I think the demarcation of the public space, to me, could help. I think the idea of a camera is fine, but I think that it's much easier to drive past and see, hey, the bollards are in the wrong place. It's an easy discussion point.
And I think that would be part of the, I go along with your point. I agree with the markings. Right now there's markings on there that basically delineate as part of the queue for the restaurant. And with those perpendicular markings there, marking off the spaces, you know, it's showing that, you know, people don't go here. And so I don't have a problem with the signage on the ground. But once again, it's going to be, you know, I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, everybody's going to want to lean up against the railing to look at the otters. You know, they're not going to want to be 5 feet away, which we actually should be required an 8-foot lateral access, not a 4-foot lateral access like there is. We should be required, you know, we should be requiring an 8-foot lateral access all the way through that property. So, at the bare minimum, I'm with you on the marking, and I'm with Jesse on the cameras.
I understood the bollards to be fixed. Am I missing that?
They added one. I think they're proposing to add one or two more along that, the transition between the asphalt and the cement walkway there to delineate that space. So,
okay. You could certainly ask the applicant. It looks like Kathy has something she might want to add to the conversation if you want to let her do that.
Okay. Kathy, would you like to add something or clarify?
Sure. Maybe I can help out just a little bit. So a couple things. One, on the camera, there is a camera on the gate side. So if somebody says on, you know, May 22nd at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the gate was closed, Gio's got a camera so he can go back and take a look and do that. And he has offered to keep a log so that if the gate is closed for commercial fishing activities, or let's say that there's some repair work he needs to do down there and has to close the gate during the daytime, he's going to log that. So we'll be able to tell you exactly what was going on. The bollards, yes, we're going to put bollards and we're moving them over so that the idea is to get people to funnel in this line with the bollards and the chains so that we can keep people out of the access way. There's always going to be public that will stop there naturally and look, even if they don't have somebody in the takeout line. So we just have to be a little concerned that, you know, we're trying to monitor the public the best we can, and especially if they're in a line, that's fair. But if they're just wandering by and stop, we're not to blame on that one. And the other thing I want to bring up is on, while we're supportive of coming back to the Planning Commission for review, I have a little concern about the 3 months, only because right now in the position that we're in with this pandemic and the social distancing we're having, I think that some of the situations are getting exacerbated here because typically you wouldn't have people 6 feet apart in the takeout line. So now we're trying to spread the public apart from each other. So it's actually making it a little bit more difficult when they go up to the line, just because we are trying to get them to practice the social distancing. If in 3 months we're still going on and we're still practicing social distancing and we're having people milling around in the parking lot, which again may be, you know, part of people going to the takeout window, or maybe it's just the local fishermen are standing in their parking lot and talking to each other, whatever. But I think that the 3 month mark is maybe a little too quick until we get over this pandemic that we're in right now, and in our orders that we have and the social distancing changes. I think it's a little difficult and a little unfair to try to put a benchmark on Giovanni when we've got things that are completely out of his control and the situation is different. So if we, you know, if the orders get lifted and we get back to a normalcy in 3 months, then I think then giving a chance of a normal time for a 3 month period for a review would be fair, which actually would probably put us about 6 months from now rather than 3 months from now. So if you don't mind just taking that into consideration right now, you know, 3 months may be a little premature just because of the situation that we're in.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy. That's a valid point, you know. I'm sorry, I keep asking this, but my video is not changing over, so I don't know if I'm coming through.
You are.
Okay.
You're good.
Great. Okay, so what we've got here is, let's see where people stand on this. As far as what I see as consensus item, you know, the signage, let's go with the easy one first. Let's go with the signage too. I think we have, you know, we have agreement that the signage will be okay, and that they can treat that, the unique signage, as they see fit on that to make it look as good as, you know, as reasonable with, but be able to keep the funkiness about it. Do I have head nods on all that? Okay. I think we got agreement on that. Okay. On far as the pathway, so I'm going from the easiest to the hardest here. So as far as the pathway, I'm willing to let them you know, because of the conditions mostly, I'm willing to let them try their solution and see how it works. Do I have agreement on that and head nods? Okay.
I've thought, though, when you say the pathway, you mean the queuing in front of the takeout window?
No, I'm talking about the pathway through the property, you know, okay, around the tanks.
All right.
And the ADA issue with the pathway, also the fact that it's 5 feet instead of the required 8 foot. Mm. So, okay, so we have pretty much unanimous agreement on those two items, the way I'm reading it. Okay, so let's talk about the Beach Street Gate, the north gate. As far as the time it's open and keeping a log on when it's closed, and we, you know, having a camera set on it. You know, my position is I'm not for that. I think it should be removed, but I'm willing to let them see. Let them give that a try, and let's see if they can comply. Where do you stand on this?
If I can add a couple more comments to that, as opposed to what? Because I mean, I think there's been a rather clear demonstration that it hasn't worked, and I just don't know how much more time is going to fix that.
I agree with you. Until this came up to us, it hadn't worked. But you know, once again, I'm deferring more to the situation we're in right now. And rather than put another hardship, you know, on them, let's see what they can do. Lately they've been compliant, and they've been good at keeping it open.
If I can be frank, I'm tempted to vote no on the whole thing because of this. I feel that strongly about it. Okay. However, I understand where you're coming from, and I also don't want to, you know, impose more hardships on Mr. DeGaramore at this time. I would like in the future to be able to, at the 6 month mark, even if they're opening it when they said they're supposed to be opening it, I still think I may want to reserve the right to change my mind later.
Oh, I'm not convinced that the gate should stay, but you know, so I you know, it's a firm, you know, I'm not convinced the gate should stay, but I'm willing to give them a try at this point, and we can check back on the review. Okay, Michael, where do you sit on this?
Yeah, I was just going to say I share your and Jesse's opinion. I'm basically anti-gate, but I know in speaking with them at the site and hearing Kathy speak tonight and what's in the staff report, I'm willing to give it another shot as well. But I think if we were designing this from scratch, that gate wouldn't be there. And
right.
I think we need to have that in the record that it's only under kind of extreme conditions here of economic turmoil and, you know, some other conditions we're still figuring out how to live with that I think we should see how it works.
Okay. Joseph?
Well, as to Jesse's question as to why it would be different this time, I think it's pretty clear that the applicant has a lot more incentive to observe what the law is, because there's no doubt that the commission is really serious about perhaps removing the gate if the letter isn't observed. So I think there's a good chance that we'll see a more accurate observation of what he should do.
Okay. And then Susan, I think we know your your position on this, but I want you to reiterate.
Yeah, I feel like as long as we consider ourselves a commercial fishing community, we need to have the gate. And if we decide we don't need our commercial fishermen anymore, and they don't need to have the ability to do their industry in a safe manner, then okay, take all the gates away. But I really feel this is important for the commercial fishing people.
So. Okay. I'll just comment. There's there's no gates down at the, you know, the landing behind, you know, behind Todd Mazzini's. There's no gates, you know, at the commercial landing, you know, in, you know, over there, you know, by the Dutchman. So there's, you know, I'll take issue with you on that, but
is there a fuel dock there? They don't have the fuel there, do they?
No, they don't have the fuel there, right, but they still have all the commercial.
Do they have the forklifts?
Commercial landing. They have the forklifts. They have the fish. You know, the fish boxes, the ice makers. They have all
a different structure over there, but
yeah,
you know, I'm not a fisher person. I don't.
Okay, so I think we're in agreement at least on the 6 month on that. So for the gate, for right now, we'll see how that goes. So we had the south access, the pathway, the Beach Street gate, the signage. So Scott, do we need anything? Do we need a condition to set up that we need to have them come back on a 6 month review on this?
I believe that Cindy can verify this, but there's already a condition out there that they come back in 6 months. I think we do have to alter, if you guys are fine with the signage, we do have to alter the sign conditions, Cindy, is that correct?
Yeah, so you should decide if you want to remove planning condition number one, which would require restoration of the Godfather signs. And condition three is the gate closure condition, which would require them to maintain a record of gate closures for 6 months and then come back to the planning commission in 6 months.
We could certainly add in the review, you know, of the queuing line into that as well for you.
Okay. So do I have a Joseph?
Well, could we return just a moment to Jesse's point about how the queuing line is going to work? What I'm going to I can foresee, and if we come back in 6 months, that there's going to be some anecdotal evidence that it didn't work, and then there's going to be anecdotal evidence that at times it did, and you know, at that point, I'd like to sort of avoid you know, he said, she said. I mean, could we talk a little bit more about how we're going to decide this 6 months or more as to whether it's working or not? Because I think that's really key.
What parameters would you want to see? Well, do we have a camera?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I would think, you know, random photographs of the site, including, well, random photographs of the site at what are peak business hours would probably do the trick, but I'm not sure, you know, I don't want to put an additional burden on the community development office. I'm not sure if we as the commissioners should be the ones that one of us should be out there taking the pictures.
Well, I think if we have a security camera, they should be able to do a 6 month log on that with, you know, with days picked out, you know, on their review period. We could pick out, you know, 12, 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock, you know, for single photographs off a security camera from, you know, 1 or 2 days, you know, on the weekends out of a month or something.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that would be acceptable. And I think that would give verification for, you know, one argument or the other.
I have a challenge with what we're asking the applicant to do, because again, if he has this massive line of people, is he supposed to say, I'm sorry, we cut off here. We can only take 30 people in line and the rest of you have to go eat somewhere. I mean, what do you?
No, we ask him to keep the lateral access open and clear.
Yeah.
So that people that are walking up and down the bayfront can pass without having to shoulder their way through 67 people.
But what if, like it was mentioned, sometimes people just stop and look at the otters there? I mean, people stop and lean over the fence all the time. And they're not having any. I do it. I'm not there for the food necessarily at all. But as I take my walks along there, I stop and look. So how do you measure that with pictures or even with a video?
Well, then they have a cue the other way.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of my whole point the whole time.
What'd you say, Jesse? I'm sorry.
That was kind of my point the whole time, is that a cue only really works towards the t-shirt shop. If we're trying to evaluate whether Mr. DeGaramore's line is affecting public access, it's going to be basically, I mean, it could be probably look, the same people could look at the same video of the same 1 hour Saturday afternoon and make different determinations of who's sitting on the railing and who's, is it Mr. DeGaramore's customers? Is it public? Is it, I mean, it...
Yeah, I agree with you, Jesse, but I'm willing to go the benefit of the doubt at this point, you know, to give them the opportunity to try it their way. But I don't believe it's going to work. I think, you know, like I stated, I believe that it's going, there are people are going to, you know, just jump the bollards or just going to walk around them and stand over there, and it's going to block the public access. So I think that he, you know, that's going to be a management issue that he's going to have to take care of, that he's going to have to, for the remainder of the time he's doing business there, however many years that's going to be a management issue with him. If he wants to come up with a structural issue that will solve that he doesn't have to deal with it on an ongoing basis, that's going to be up to him. But the public access has to remain free and clear so people can walk through there.
To me, the public access is not any different than we have some narrow sidewalks with telephone poles, light things like that. Someone stops in front of a window to look at a display or something like that. We have a constriction. You know, so there's all those opportunities. The thing to me is that we've got an extremely successful takeout business that routinely is going to have this queue. The queue can't be in the public space. I'm not going to worry that somebody has to squeeze a bit to get around social distancing to go past somebody watching the orders. I'm concerned that the queue for the takeout is against the rail. And the footballers show that that's effective. I think that's a good faith effort. And if on a big weekend where we've got, you know, tons of people down at the harbor, hopefully again someday, we'll worry about how effective this method is. But I just want to go on the record saying I'm not, it's not like we have to have a 5-foot open corridor for fire access or something like that. It's really just don't put the queue in the public space. That's my biggest concern.
And I guess my only response to that is that's fine. I mean, if that's what we end up with, and that's what the commission decides, I mean, I'll go along with it, and I'll smile, and I'll go on with life. I'm just saying, if we're going to review this in 6 months, if we don't have concrete benchmarks that we're evaluating it against, what are we evaluating?
Chair Lohr, do you mind if I weigh in?
Sure.
I think you all know what it looks like when it doesn't work. Right? Because it doesn't work now. I mean, well, it didn't work up until the point where you started managing it a little bit better. But I mean, it's been a problem in the past. You know what it looks like when it's like that. If it looks like that in 6 months, I think you have your answer. I don't think you need metrics for any of that. I think if it's still doing the same thing and you can't walk by there, and sometimes when I've gone by that location, there's just a mob of people in and around the line, right? That's the thing that we need to stop having happen, right? So I think we'll all see that. I go down there 5 days a week when I'm in town. So, I mean, like I would see it frequently. And I'm sure all of you go by it frequently as well. So I don't know that the metric thing is as much of an issue, because I think you know what you want it to be. And I think you know what you don't want it to be. And I think there'll be consensus once, you know, 6 months from now when we pick this back up again.
Okay. Joseph?
I just want to say, the situation currently, or up until very recently, has been egregious. So what we're really trying to do is not achieve perfection here, but just to avoid an egregious situation. Again, that addresses people who are not ordering food and only looking at the otters, or even if there's occasionally, you know, some infractions, some invasion of the boardwalk. We're just trying to eliminate a situation which really isn't tolerable right now.
Agreed. Okay. So then I think we're going to need, are we in agreement that we'll give this 6 month you know, a 6-month trial and review it in 6 months and recommend to the applicant that best option is if they, you know, put a security camera out there that they can, you know, show videos, you know, that would be the best way that they could quantify this. And we'll know. And like Scott said, we'll know if it's not working. So then the other thing is we'll need to amend the conditions on the sign to allow the unique and character of the patina on those existing signs to remain. So do we have a motion?
Excuse me, Chair Lord.
Okay. Yes, thanks.
Do you want to modify the sign condition or do you want to just delete it entirely with just a verbal comment that, you know, restore the signs in a manner that, you know, keeps the eclectic nature, but allow them to do with it what they want, whether that's polyurethane or just, you know, the point being is that not adding the condition.
Right. I'm comfortable with not adding the condition. What is the rest of the commission?
I agree.
Agreed. Okay. It looks like we have an agreement on that. Thanks, Cindy. Mm-hmm. So we'll eliminate the condition. I think it was planning condition 3. Is that?
Actually, no. Condition 1.
Condition 1. Okay.
That's the gate condition.
Okay. I can't go back and forth on my electronics that fast.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All good.
Okay. Okay. Great. So do we have a motion? Does someone wish to attempt a motion on this? Michael, you're up.
I'm looking for the proper place here. So it's under the recommendation, Cindy. Is that it?
Page 1 of the staff report.
We conditionally approve the project resolution 10-20, which includes findings and conditions of approval for the CUP MIN 20-003 depicted on the site plan dated April 14th, 2020. And further amending it to drop clauses one and three. Is that
only condition 1, not 3?
Condition 1.
Unless you want to eliminate the gate condition.
No, I think we want to keep that. Okay.
And so clarification on that, Cindy, that allows for a review by the Planning Commission on this in 6 months or approximately?
Yes, it says within 6 months or no later than January 2021, just for allowance over the year-end holidays.
Okay, great.
Did we want to add the review of not just the gate? Because it reads the gate, doesn't it, Cindy?
The gate. So do you want to add the queuing of the south area?
Yes.
And then also I think we need to add the pathway to see how that's working out.
Okay.
And does that include things like what's the official complaint to the staff? Do you file complaints when they come in about people who are concerned about the conditions? Do we have a way of notating those things?
If we received complaints about any of those items?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly we'll keep track of those over the next 6 months.
All right.
Sure.
Okay,
so I think we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, any discussion on the motion and the second? Okay, I think we're ready. Cindy, did you want to call a question?
Sure. Commissioner Lucas.
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart.
Aye.
Commissioner Barone.
Aye.
Commissioner Graffia.
Aye.
Chairperson Lord.
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you, Kathy and Gio.
Thank you, Commission.
Okay, great. Okay. Okay, that was our only item for public hearings. Next item is new business, and we have none. Unfinished business, we have none that we're going to talk about. I'm sure we've got a bunch. Planning Commissioner comments and future agenda items. Joseph?
I had a thought. From time to time, we're talking about the Embarcadero and having it be a one-way street or perhaps even closing it off to traffic at times. Now I'm thinking in terms of this pandemic and the restaurateurs and the need for more space in the restaurants. And I wonder if we ought to think about the notion of turning some portion of the Embarcadero into restaurant table space. Not permanently, but maybe just in some fashion to help out the various restaurants. Just a thought.
I just heard today that Paris is going to be closing off lanes on their streets and allowing the cafes to put tables out in the streetscape.
Yeah.
So it's
actually something we're looking at.
Oh, okay.
Even parking areas, because when the orders come out, allow like restaurants to fully reopen. A lot of them, will have more parking than they'll need because they're going to only have 50% of the seating in it, likely. So we're looking at all of those things. We're partnered with the chamber, talking to Erica about it quite a bit. And as soon as we get clarity from where we're going, we'll have a little better idea about what we're doing. We have kind of the generalized game plans in place, but the county has to put some of the specifics in it because the governor's order, when it comes through, is probably just going to be mostly what we're doing now. But there's the ability for some of the, the counties in the state that are doing well, meaning they don't have a lot of cases, like San Luis, and to have more things open. You just have to submit the application to the state, and then they'll approve it, and they agree with it. So we're working on things like that. So we are looking at some of those options.
I know there's no comments or things like that, but I mean, the place I always think of, I love to take my students up to a place called Belden Lane up in San Francisco, which is a narrow alleyway between some of the mid-rise structures, and all the restaurants spill out into the street there. It's one of the most delightful places. The idea of dining outside here is we're so gifted with an incredible climate to do that. I would think that would be a great thing to have the business community see if they can get some, consolidation on that thinking.
Yeah, that would be great.
Be a good time to consider shutting down the Embarcadero between Pacific and Harbor, like we talked about years ago.
Yeah. Okay. I had an item I wanted to bring up also, just to see. I know we have no money to do anything particularly, but we do have the housing element, so I'd like people to kind of think about this. The basis of this too is that there's been a homeless issue here. I had direct, face-to-face, action with that, or basically, when they moved the homeless out of the creek next to the high school, they moved up to the state park and the creek up there. And so there was a steady traffic by my commercial property. And so they were interacting with my property quite a bit there, security problems and all that. Also, just on the Dog Beach, there was an encampment there that had kind of grown up over the last several weeks and was just moved out. What I would like to see is I would like to see us maybe do some different thinking on this and see if there's some parcels of property that the city has under lease, such as storage, the storage area for the RVs and the boats over by the park area there at the end of 41. Maybe we could create a parking lot area that would be would give a little bit better conditions for some of these people. And I know this would be just a massive headache, but it seems like this may be the time that every community should be doing something, it seems ridiculous that a homeless shelter costs close to $750,000 per bed, but maybe if we could find a parking lot and some porta potties when this whole crisis is over and create a location that would be somewhat better managed than having people sleep in the creeks or sleep on the, have their RVs and campers parked on different side streets throughout the city, that maybe it would be worthwhile and would help solve some of the homeless problem without creating an attractive nuisance. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that?
I very much agree with that. I mean, vagrancy can only be against the law when there's a viable place for homeless people to go. And as long as they don't, you certainly can't punish them for not having a home.
Yeah. Anybody else want to chime in on this or keep their hands clean?
It's a great thought. I mean, of course, everybody would love to be able to solve the homeless problem, be next to the cure for cancer and
yeah,
lauded. But I'm willing to entertain and as part of the commission, any thoughtful exercise in that direction. I just, if we have one, I'm all ears.
Okay. Scott, let me ask you this. Are there grants available to do something like that? To do a parking lot with semi-supervision or?
I mean, some funding over time does become available for things like this. I don't know what's out there right now. It's not something I've been looking at, right, more recently. But there are, funding sources out there for things like that. As part of the whole response to COVID-19, we created a pretty big issue for some of the homeless folks, right? In that all the gyms closed down. A lot of them, had memberships in gyms, they could take showers and things like that. And then that was cut off from them, which is pretty tough. So the county had to take that under advisement and create, scenarios where they could go. There are a couple of locations, I believe, that where the ones that are, have vehicles and things can go and park, and I think they have shower facilities, some of them, and things like that. There's different solutions that are out there. I think they, that was in addition to coming up with places in case, where they might be able to be housed if, they became ill and those types of things.
Right.
Yeah, I just want to say, I think this is a great thing. I think it's one of those things, though, it's not going to succeed with the city as the only entity. I think a lot of the, I know the faith community we're part of in Los Osos has a tremendous buy-in to what's going on in some of the efforts over there. And I would imagine there are other collaborators here that would be good to survey to see if anything is already being done or there's some interest in moving things more forward. I think the thing the city would want to do is to try to see if there's a way that the process, when something like this gets agendized, what are the issues that we actually have some control over, which would be some of those temporary use kind of things that we're talking about. So I think it's almost impossible for me to understand how the city can shoulder the problem without having an awful lot of community support and other collaborators.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the idea about, you mentioned the housing element. You have the draft, and then hopefully you're starting to look at it because I'm going to bring it in front of you soon. But that is, some place where, policies could be put in there for, to have the city, potentially go look at things like that. There's an implementation section in it, that tells us all the things we're going to go do. Certainly, something along those lines wouldn't be, out of the realm.
One of the this is a scary thought, but one of the issues is we have, driving around, I see all these church parking lots and they're empty 6.5 days out of the week, So, maybe partnering with them and giving them the temporary, zoning clearance that something maybe could even be set up in some of these parking lots that are underused, you know, most of the week.
I think especially timely, because we just have no idea what's going to be happening in the larger macroeconomic picture. I mean, we've already seen what happens to our own city's finances here with 2 or 3 months of damage, and we're liable to have a significant increase in the needs to address these issues that go well beyond what we've had before. And it would be great to maybe be ahead of the curve, if there is any way to be ahead of the curve on something like this before, you know, we have a much more obvious problem than we have now.
Anybody else like to speak to this or any other item? Okay, Jesse?
I have another item, if we're done talking about that one. I just wanted to kind of say my piece about the city's finances. I think we all have to be realistic as a community of the impacts that are going to, that have occurred and are going to continue to occur for the next foreseeable future, and you know, make some hard decisions. And we're all going to have to temper our expectations on what the city can provide and is going to be able to provide. And just got to pull together and do, everybody do their part. You know, I just wanted to say that. So.
Right. The other, one other thing I wanted to bring up to you, Scott, if it's kind of maybe a question for you too, is that over this last weekend, I've just been noticing that we've had a lot of houses filled. You know, some of them are Airbnbs, or I know that they're not, you know, I've seen new cars and bunches of new cars in some of these houses that sit vacant during the week. Where are we with tracking, you know, all the illegal Airbnbs and picking up TOT from them? Or
So for the illegal ones, we have a contract with Host Compliance. They monitor all of our vacation rentals in town, both legal and illegal. And through them, we send out notifications and things like that to stop them from doing that. We're getting ready, I think, here to issue some citations for some of them. It's not something, been spending a lot of our time mostly on, as it relates to code enforcement, on, you know, issues more related to COVID-19. But this is one that's been sort of lingering out there that we needed to circle back around on. And I was talking to the code enforcement officer about it last week, and going through what the citation process would be. And so we're going to be doing some of that coming up here pretty quick. So yeah, we're also, you know, we get complaints, you know, also in relation to COVID-19 for, you know, vacation rentals that are operating legally, people coming in. We have a lot of, you're all aware of this, we have a lot of second homes in town. You know, over 20% of the existing housing stock are second homes. And so you get those folks coming into town too. So I would say about, you know, half of the complaints we get related to, it's an Airbnb, it's not an Airbnb, it's somebody, you know, that has a second home here, is coming here, or their family's coming here. You know, if they're not, that's a violation of the order, in case anybody wonders. You know, the order is shelter at home, not shelter in Morro Bay. You don't live here. So those are technically violations. You know, the process the police department has taken and we have taken in community development is education and warnings. And then last, you know, sort of option is to issue $1,000 fine. And we can do those things. We have issued some warning letters, and the next time we have to talk to those folks, potentially they'd be getting $1,000 fine. They're not going to heed, you know, the direction. That's assuming things don't, you know, change here in the near term. So we are actively monitoring those things. There is there's a county, you know, call line that some things come in, you know, complaints come in through as well as through PD, as well as through my department.
Okay, great. Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I just noticed a giant uptick on multiple cars parked in driveways where there usually isn't any car at all. So I, you know, I was assuming too that it was, you know, was not the best situation for a shelter at home, you know, shelter at home situation in the COVID-19. So we have multiple families coming together and staying here for a weekend. It's, you know, doesn't seem to bend the curve like we would want it to. But, okay, anybody else have anything to say on? Okay, then Scott, do you have any comments?
I don't really have anything else. I think I mentioned it before. We're actively working on what it is to open our businesses back up. I had two conversations today, with our EOC team and with the chamber, talking about where we're going to go next. Talking about putting the parameters together and handouts for our businesses so they know what they're supposed to do. It's about education. And giving them the tools they need to be successful. Chambers conducting outreach to our business community right now, different sectors like restaurants, retail, service, commercial folks, that type of thing, and having meetings with the different sectors or offering them up Zoom meetings to give them educational information because I think things are going to be changing and the orders are going to be changing both at the state level and the county. So we want to be prepared. We are actively partnered with the county and working with them through this. So we're all messaging the same thing and we're pushing the same things and trying to get that information out to our community. So that's what we're doing right now. It's what I'll be doing, through this, the next 5 to 6 to 7 days. Hopefully, we might get some direction and ability to open some things up starting next week, maybe middle of the week, something like that. So that's what we're working towards. Other than that, you have on your next Planning Commission meeting agenda is the Haslow Affordable Housing Project coming forward, coming back to you, I guess I should say. You saw it on concept review previously, so something to look forward to.
All right. Thanks, Scott. I just want to wish everybody to, stay safe. And we'll adjourn this meeting to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting on May 19th, 2020 at 6 p.m. through another one of these wonderful teleconferences. So good night, all.
Night, everybody.
Bye, folks.